bittersweet change at the beaches as local tenants are forced out to make way for big box chains. We'll tell you about it just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Hope you had a nice weekend. Thanks for starting your work week off with us. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on big changes at the beaches. Get on the line now with your questions and comments at 549-2937. Then later, Florida author Robert Maycomer, plus a special event for Drive Electric Week and Culpepper on the Jags' disappointing home opener. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's the end of an era at the beaches as the last remaining original tenants at the Pablo Plaza Shopping Center are told to hit the bricks to make way for big box stores like Whole Foods, which are planning to come in. Now, while there is a lot of excitement over that new chain coming to the area, there's also sadness as the locally owned shops say goodbye and look for a new spot to try to do business. Here to tell us more, writer Ron Whittington, who's been covering the transition for the Florida Times Union. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
And Ken Rahim Juro, owner of Rahim's Walls and Floors, one of the local businesses. Another one is the Monkey's Uncle Tavern. Good morning to you, Ken.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about locally owned businesses that have been in the same spot for decades moving out for big box chains? It's not a new story, and it's certainly part of the capitalist system. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. So, Ron, you've written about this for the newspaper. How did you hear about this story? What interested you in this?
Well, I live in the neighborhood, and I've been here 13 years, and so that's the closest shopping center to me. We've seen some changes in the past. I mean, the Pablo Cinema left several years ago, and Jason's Deli last year, they closed. So there were a lot of empty spots up there, and really it happened to go along with the fact that there were all these rumors going around the beaches on what was going to happen to, say, Ellen's Kitchen. I did talk to the manager there, and he wanted to make sure everybody knew they're not closing. They're looking to not open just one, but two locations, one in Neptune Beach, and they're looking in South Jacksonville Beach. But I think what I wanted to find out was what was happening. What's going on with these neighborhood shops and all these? There are a lot of mom and pop shops there. They're slowly being kicked out, and so I was just trying to get to the bottom of it to kind of quell the rumor mill out there to find out what was happening.
And one of these businesses is yours, Ken. Tell us about the history of Rahim's Walls and Floors.
Well, we started in 1962 in the Arlington area. And then from there, we went to San Jose, built the store there, had several more in Arlington Town and Country. And then in 1985, Mom and Dad and Mr. and Mrs. Rahim, her brother and sister-in-law decided to move to the beach in 85, so she thought that was a great thing. We weren't too sure, but boy, it sure did take off. So we moved in the Pablo Plaza. Of course, it was locally owned by several attorneys, the Moore family and the Adams, and they talked us into moving out there, so to speak, and we did. And we were actually we were next door to where Jason's Deli is back in 85, but then when Jason's came in 93, the mall people, the good people, they moved us over to where we presently are, which is actually next to Pablo Theaters, and that was a great place too. And we've been there since, and we've been there about 30 years, and we do all the decorating and upholstery and wall covering and, you know, stuff like that, and drapes and bedding and... we kind of all knew this was coming, but we just didn't know it would be right now, right before Christmas. And I got a very fantastic email from a very large real estate company at the beaches. It says, I quote, "I'm sorry that you are caught up in the Equity One bloodbath at Pablo Plaza. It's sad to see all these long-term local, small neighborhood tenants displaced." And that's very true. I mean, it's sad. It really is.
So we're talking about Rames Walls and Floors, Ellen's and Monkey's Uncle Tavern, which is sort of an institution at the beaches, Ron. And the number to join us is 549-2937. Now, this isn't a unique story to the Jacksonville Beaches communities. This happens all over the country. What would you say to those listening who might say, well, it's sad, but this is the free market at work, and if a bigger chain comes in and they have a product people want, well, that's simply capitalism. What would you say to that argument?
Well, I'll kind of quote some of the folks I talked to, and, you know, conservatism, if you follow it, you know, they say small business is the backbone of the country. So you have these big corporations that come in and seem to, they give it lip service, but they really don't follow through on it. I mean, that's kind of the gist I got from the folks I talked to. For example, one of the folks that manages Concept Cutters, which is also going to be displaced after 30 years, a hair salon. And he said, you know, here's the thing. Is there any room left for mom and pops anymore? And that's kind of the gist you get. You know, they've been there 30 years. They've been good tenants. They provide a service to the neighborhood, but they're not a big chain. And so what happens to these folks? Do we really care about these small businesses, and how can we kind of protect them and nurture them, I guess, in a sense?
There is actually a growing national movement to support locally owned businesses. If you go to the website independentwestand.org, they will tell you that if you shift a portion of your spending from national chains and online to independent, locally owned and operated businesses, you can have a dramatic effect on the local economy, saying that if half of the U.S. population spent just $50 each month at an independent business, it would generate $42.6 billion in terms of employing more people at these small businesses. Mm-hmm. So that's the argument for small and local. But Ken, I would think you would also make the argument that the small businesses lend the color and the character to a community as well. Is that right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm on call all the time. Yesterday, two jobs. And, you know, I love my customers. I love my ladies. I mean, if they need me, I'm there to help them with drapes, bedding, carpet, whatever it takes.
Now, Equity One, which is taking over this strip mall, and by the way, how many Florida strip malls have we seen this type of thing happen to?
Right.
They've announced an $18 million makeover of the shopping center. Whole Foods is coming in as a grocery anchor, PetSmart as a junior anchor, and what else?
Well, a lot of it's conjecture because we can't get them to respond to any calls, but we hear Chipotle is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Another chain is expected to come in where Jason's Deli was on the south side of the center. The other thing I do need to mention is it's the timing. You know, there's no reason for them to push out these retailers during the holiday season, which is the biggest time of year for almost every retailer, a restaurant. And so what's the big urgency, you know, to get them out in December when there's not going to be any construction going on? We all know that. And not wait until January or February. So in a way, it seems, again, without getting anybody to respond back from Equity One, it seems very vindictive in a way.
And
I don't know why.
And we weren't able to get a comment from them, but so we can't really present their side. But obviously, they're making the business case for this.
Right. And, you know, I think we all understand progress. I mean, you see shopping centers, you don't want them to go the opposite way. You don't want them to be empty and dilapidated. You want investment to go in. So I think we all understand that. But at the same time, there's got to be, to me, some type of balance, at least in working with some tenants who've been there 30 years and, again, paid their leases on time and been good tenants. You know?
And we'll go to your calls in a moment. Big box stores versus mom and pop at the beaches. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. So, Ken, yourself, the Monkey's Uncle Tavern, Concept Cutters, all of these businesses are having to find somewhere to go. Where are you with that?
Well, I haven't been able to find anything concrete at the beach. I mean, everybody's looking at the same time. Besides us, there's Oric looking. There's Quest Lab looking. Right now, I can't find anything. So we do have a house that we had back in the 60s. On Hendrickson, right off Hendrickson Emerson on Claremont Road. So I'm thinking about I mean, the house is in the family, so I'm thinking about moving everything there for the time being before I can find a place.
So when you say you can't find anything, are you saying you can't find anything affordable?
Well,
or you just can't find anything?
Can't find anything.
Nothing. There are no empty offices or business spaces for rent at the beach?
Well, there are, but they're 1,000 square feet and less, and I need at least 1,500 or 2,000 square feet.
What does that say, then, about the larger picture, Ron, when it comes to business development and how you've seen the changes over the years in the beaches communities?
Well, it kind of mirrors what's happening on the residential side, because there aren't many properties. There isn't much space, because it is a finite amount of land on the beach. It is a beach, so or an island, really. So they're trapped in the same. For example, I did a story several weeks ago on Ponte Vedra Boulevard, where a lot of people were buying these $2-3 million homes on the boulevard and raising them and building new homes because there's no more space in that area. So it's very prime property. So it makes it difficult for them, especially when they were given eviction notice, 30 days ago? Mm-hmm. So you're asking them to find a new spot, you know, within 60, 80, or 90 days. That's difficult. You know, it takes time to find some spaces. Now, they're all kind of struggling right now with that. Concept Cutters wants to stay in that area because that's where their clientele is. So they're trying to stay in South Jacksonville Beach. Monkey's Uncle has a letter of intent. They will reopen where the old Land Sharks Cafe was, which is in North Jacksonville Beach on the other side of Beach.
So their patrons will probably follow them.
Some will, you know, but again, it's a neighborhood. It's kind of a neighborhood bar.
A neighborhood bar.
Restaurant. So,
yeah.
So, you know, they're going to lose some patronage, I'm sure.
Let's go to your calls right now. If you're just tuning in, as Whole Foods and other big box stores come into a key shopping center at the beaches, the small little mom and pop stores that have been there for 3 decades have to go. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Mimi in San Marco this morning. Hey, Mimi, how are you?
I'm great, and I wanted to thank Ken for his many, many years of service and loving help and care to my mother, Anne, and many of her friends who followed him wherever he went. And
thank
hopefully
you.
His customers will do the same.
Oh, that's thank nice. You. Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. I guess
thank
that
you,
customer
Mimi.
Loyalty does stand
yes.
for something, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Mimi.
We appreciate that, Mimi.
Thanks for the call. It's 549-2937. Maria in Putnam County. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Melissa. And hello, all the entrepreneurs. And I know of all your shops, and I don't even live in the county. I live in the adjoining county, so that's how well-known you are. I hear it in your voices and that sadness of what's going on. I'm also an ex-successful entrepreneur. We had a situation similar to the one you're facing now, and it was just before the holidays, and the time was running out, and all of the business owners went in together and actually was successful in getting a moratorium so that they could at least stay in business until after the holidays and use that ex surplus to go and relocate, and they all stayed together and relocated together into a smaller strip mall. Just some idea. I want to encourage you, don't give up.
Oh, that's true. That's very good. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, thanks, Maria. We'll go back to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Here's an email from a listener. Why not pull away from the beaches and move to revitalize the Regency area? Big box stores are pulling out of that mall. Maybe small businesses there would be better.
Well, that's true. We had stores in town also for years, you know. But the beaches is really where it's happening. It has since, you know, I can remember.
And you think there's more business to be done at the beaches?
Yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I do a lot of business in St. Augustine. Of course, a lot of my business comes from Ortega, too, because a lot of the Ortega women have places in Jack's Beach or Sawgrass on the ocean.
You've got an upscale clientele.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you know, Ron, you've been out at the beaches for many years. You've seen so many of these local businesses come and go. I think this has affected you. This story has resonated with you because these are some businesses that have managed to ride out so many ups and downs in the economy for so long.
Well, and I think the best quote was from a friend of mine, a designer I know named Bob, and he's lived there longer than I have. And he said that, you know, the issue is when he first moved there, he could go up to this shopping center, he could get a haircut, he could get a pizza. Mario's Pizza was there. Yeah. They're gone because, again, of the lease issue, because they were, a lot of these folks have been going month to month for about 3 years. And it puts them in a position where, okay, I want to make renovations at my place, but I cannot do it because I don't have any assurance I'm going to be there. So, but his point was, you know, I go up there, I could get my car serviced, I could get a haircut, I could get a pizza, I could get I could get some tailoring done. You can do all these things, and now all these services are gone. So it really, you know, it was a great place where you could go and have all the things you need done by local folks that you know by name.
Does it bother you both that both of our major parties give a lot of lip service to small business being the backbone of the economy, but when it comes to these global economic forces, there isn't the level of support, I don't believe, that you'd like to see?
Well, I think it's disheartening, you know, that I understand capitalism, I understand you want progress, you want renovation and things like that, but at the same time, it seems that you should be able to give some type of, I guess, I don't know what I'm trying to say, just some type of extra help to the entrepreneur out there.
Yeah, my customers in Sawgrass, my ladies, are actually looking for places for me.
Really?
Five or six of them looking, and you defy a woman. Father told me years ago, the famous best words to say, yes, dear.
So, with all of that said, where are you going to go? You're not sure yet.
I'm not sure yet. I haven't found anything positively yet at all. But one little factor I want to mention, when this thing came out first month to month, I went to Equity One's main lawyer, Richard Cohen. I don't know if he's still there or not. But I paid him to allow me 60 days grace period to move out. And now, I mean, I paid him a fee. I paid Equity One a fee. And now that's even being blasted out. I mean, I have no leg to stand on there either.
Well, what is Equity One, as the reporter of this story, Ron, what's Equity One's position?
Well, their position is that they need to renovate this property. They have two properties. They have one, people probably know it, where Trader Joe's just went in. They own that. They also own one in Atlantic Beach, and those two have been renovated. And this is like the person I quoted in the story from a previous story said this is the stepchild shopping center. This needs a renovation. So that's why they decided that it needs to be upgraded.
And this is where the Whole Foods will eventually go, and to orient people, if they're driving up the main drag at the beaches, where will this be?
Probably the one they'll know is where Cruisers is, mm-hmm.
in
the Office Depot,
in
that shopping center, right,
yeah.
where the theater used to be. And I do want to tell the sequence real quick, at least from what I can understand right now. Your place, Ken's place, you'll be leaving at the end of October, is that mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
And then the uncle, they're going to try to get out by the end of November and to get in their new location. And Concept Cutters and Ellen's actually haven't gotten an eviction notice yet. It's all verbal. And they'll be leaving early next year.
Let's take one more call. It's Kimberly in Green Cove Springs. Hi, Kimberly.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, I just wanted to thank local business owners. Being one myself, I understand the economical situation. But also being a mom-and-pop connoisseur, I learned that you cannot receive the quality of service with corporate stuff. For example, when you go to a mom-and-pop restaurant, you get better food because it's cooked with love, and it's usually homemade, and the quality is better. So you return because of the service as well as the food. But my husband will not go into corporate food locations. We hunt for mom and pop because we know the quality is there. So I'm really saddened that this happens, but we do know that entrepreneurs are very strong people, and I encourage everyone to hang in there and relocate where you need to go and see what happens with the future.
Thanks, Kimberly. Kimberly in Green Cove Springs. Calls from all over the listening area this morning.
How about that?
Yeah. And thank you both so much for joining us. Keep us posted on how this plays out.
Yeah, we'll do something. God has a plan. It's just going to take a little time to put together. He always does.
Thanks for being with us. Ron Whittington and Ken Rahim-Juro, owner of Rahim's Walls and Floors, joining us. Well, later, Cole Pepper on that disappointing home opener for the Jags. But up next, Florida author Robert Maycomer. We're back in a moment.
Radio is the Great American Songbook, oldies and light jazz.
The thing that's cool for me is that it feels like it's the music of my life.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Join WJCT for a dinner honoring this year's American Graduate Champions, Wednesday, September 30th, 6 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Hear their stories and learn how their efforts are making a difference in increasing graduation rates here on the First Coast. For more information and tickets, 358-6327, WJCT.org.
This is Watch Officer Miller Norton with the Duval County Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable food, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, Florida award-winning author and historian Robert Maycomer is known for his Honor series, a collection of historical fiction novels featuring thrillers on the high seas. Now, Maycomer will give the keynote at the upcoming Florida Heritage Book Festival later on this month in St. Augustine. He's on the line now with a preview. Robert Maycomer, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to returning over to the First Coast.
Yes, it'll be great to see lots of fans up this way, and this will be also in conjunction with the launch of your newest thriller, The Assassin's Honor. Tell us about it.
Well, The Assassin's Honor is a novel from 1892, and it is a love story and a spy story, and it is woven around the actual events in 1892 in Florida that changed world history.
Such as?
Well, I can't give away the actual events. You're going to have to find out. But I can tantalize you with this. There was a foreign assassination team in Florida in 1892, going after a world-renowned leader.
Okay. And, of course, the through line through all of your books is a fictional naval officer, Peter Wake. Can you tell us a little bit about how you developed this character, Peter Wake?
Well, yes. Peter Wake has a career that spans a period from the American Civil War, actually, in Florida, all the way to about 1908. That wasn't unusual back then. That's a long time, but it wasn't unusual. And he is an unusual naval officer because he did not graduate from the academy. He did not have political ties or wealth or education. And so he has to rely upon experience at sea, experience at decision-making, and he relies on all of that upon his concept of honor, of right and wrong.
And those are themes that you touch on in every book. Also, you take real historical events and then weave a fictional story through the lens of the Navy and the Navy's role in how America expanded into a global power. How did you develop that kind of concept and then decide to carry it through a whole group of stories?
Well, I wanted to, you can't make, the old joke is, you can't make this stuff up. People ask me where I get my ideas from real history. And so I wanted to tell the story of how these significant events changed world history and therefore changed us today. And one of the best ways to do that was to tell the story from the viewpoint of a naval officer. And for much of his career, he's involved in espionage. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the United States Navy Office of Naval Intelligence was our first and only foreign espionage agency from 1882 all the way up to the early 1900s. So they got involved in all kinds of things all over the world, and that's how I end up going around the world to research and write my books.
And tell us a little bit about that process, just the research aspect. How much time goes into researching each book?
Well, for instance, on The Assassin's Honor, in most of my novels, it takes about 4 years to do the research and then go to the places. I actually make the voyages. I go to the places. I immerse myself in the cultures. In The Assassin's Honor, the reader is going to be visiting Mexico. He's going to get some Cuban history. He's going to be in Key West. He's going to be in Tampa. So the reader is going to get an idea of what was going on in the Caribbean in 1892 and in Florida. Mm-hmm. Some of my other books have taken place in Southeast Asia, the South Pacific, South America, Africa, Europe. I have to go to these places in order to more vividly describe them.
And when it comes to the Florida Heritage Book Festival, I'm sure you'll get some questions about your point of view as a Florida author. And so much of what you write about is unique to Florida, too, correct?
Yes. I talk about some of the social and political things that were going on in our country in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, early 1900s. Florida has a fascinating history, as everybody knows, but in that particular time period, it was a nexus for a lot of things that were going on, both to the north and to the south. And you get an idea of what the early developers, land developers, were like, because they started back then, and the pioneers and things like that. So, yes, Florida is always a part of my book.
Do you have some favorite places in Florida?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I love St. Augustine. And I love St. Augustine because of the history and the culture. And they also love books there. They actually read books there. And they love authors, so how could I not love St. Augustine?
Well, that I'm sure you'll have a lot of fans then when you keynote the upcoming Florida Heritage Book Festival. That's coming up September 25th in St. Augustine. He is award-winning author Robert Maycomer. A pleasure to talk with you, and thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. And still ahead, Drive Electric Week on the First Coast. We'll tell you about it, plus sports with Cole. Much more still to come.
WJCT is proud to be your number one preset for your evening commute. But if you only turn on 89.9 when you're driving, here's what you're missing.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for
listening. This is The World.
spend your afternoons with WJCT for unique conversations about the topics of the day. Join us weekdays from 2 to 6 for the takeaway, the world, and all things considered. It's the smart way to spend your afternoon.
WJCT's Summer Sizzle Auction is where you'll find exciting items starting at up to 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through September 14th at 9 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information. Bid high and bid often.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this week marks a nationwide celebration to raise awareness about plug-in vehicles, or what you might also think of as an electric car. National Drive Electric Week is being marked here on the First Coast with a special interactive event. Here with a preview, Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of North Florida TPO. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Peter King, Customer Solutions Program Manager with JEA. Good to see you.
Good morning.
This is exciting, National Drive Electric Week, Jeff. The whole point is to get people to think about this option of a plug-in vehicle and the benefits of driving electric, right?
Absolutely. It's just an opportunity as we continue to promote the use of alternative fuels with a focus this week clearly on electric vehicles. That's the type of vehicles that much more addresses the you and me drivers of the road.
Now, let's talk about this Thursday's event. This is North Florida TPO and JEA, Peter. You're going to be outside the, and also the Whole Foods Market and Clean Fuels Coalition, all getting together for a special event Thursday night outside the Whole Foods on San Jose Boulevard. What's going to be happening?
Right. So it's Clean Fuels Coalition's part of the North Florida Transportation Planning Organization. JEA and TPO have been partnering on electric vehicles. Obviously, are interested in EVs. And this event, this is the second year we're involved with this. It's a nationwide celebration, and all communities do whatever type of event they want to do during the National Drive Electric Week. So we're going to do, it's gotten much larger this year. We're going to have over 30 electric vehicles there and the owners. So the nice thing is you can come out and talk to EV owners and ask all those questions about how you drive the car, how I charge the car, the questions we get, the same questions we get day to day.
What are the most common questions people have?
How do I charge it?
How do you charge it up?
Yeah. How do I know if I'll run out? Is it like a normal car?
And are people going to be able to drive the vehicles that are there?
Right.
They can do a test drive.
Exactly. So you'll have owners, their vehicles to talk to, and then we'll have dealers there with EVs for you to test drive. And that you really need to, if you can, get behind the wheel of an EV and experience
and
that.
Check it out. And, and Jeff, we're talking Nissan Leaf, Tesla, Chevy Volt, Ford Energy, several other makes and models.
All price points, all models, every opportunity.
And in this area around Jacksonville, there are now more charging stations going online. There are more places now for owners of these vehicles to charge their cars and vehicles, right?
There are, and there will be. Over the next month in particular, they'll see a huge change in that. Along with our partnership with JEA, one of them has been to address that most important question is, how do I charge? So we're looking to deploy EV charging stations throughout the entire JEA service area. So that would be Jacksonville predominantly, likely to install anywhere from 25 to 30 stations throughout the area.
How do you decide, Peter, where those charging stations go, and how can people find out where the nearest one is to their house or their office?
Right. So we wanted to make the process open to everybody in the JEA service territory, and so we did a simple application process. We zoned the city off because what we're trying to do is get the disbursement as widely as possible so that anywhere you are in the city with an EV, you can charge your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So these are going to be level 2 charging stations, and they'll be on a network. And so this network will show up. EV drivers, these all show up on their phone apps. And so there's going to be a phone app for that network. There's also another app out there. It's just a general app called PlugShare. All the charging stations are on PlugShare, and all the EV drivers know exactly where they are and whether they're in use or not.
And this ChargeWell network, Jeff, is part of North Florida TPO's larger strategic vision. It's one of many imperatives you're working on when it comes to transit and transportation goals for the whole region.
It is. Yeah. We've placed a strong focus now on alt fuels, and we've made significant investments in the natural gas area, and so now this is an opportunity in electric vehicle. We have branded it the ChargeWell Network. We wanted the opportunity to have it consistent throughout the area. And we've after we've finished this effort here with JEA, we've added additional funds now to both continue this partnership as well as expand it into Clay, Nassau, and St. Johns County.
Do you have any estimates, guys, on how many people in this area own a plug-in, an electric vehicle?
Yeah, we have more than an estimate. We actually, JEA tracks it monthly, correct?
Oh, okay.
So we track the 4-county TPO area. So Duval County proper has, we're approaching 370 plug-in electric vehicles. And then the 4-county area, 670, so we're approaching 700. That doesn't sound like a lot in the larger scheme of things, but in a community without public infrastructure and that's just getting started with EVs, that's a pretty darn good number.
Yeah. And do you have any targets that you'd like to meet?
We don't have the targets so much, but I do know that when we look at other areas that have invested in the charging stations, it's clearly a build it and they will come type market. That anxiety of not having charging stations is what's, frankly, limiting the growth to the numbers that it is.
Now, we need to point out that this event Thursday night is a rally. Mm-hmm. Not only can people drive these cars, there's going to be prizes, music, food. It's a party, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. When you think, 2 years ago, this started with just a couple of Nissan Leaf owners in their neighborhood parading around.
Oh, really?
Maybe about 6 or 8 cars. Last year, we had about 60, 70 people. Now we have 150 registered and over 35 EVs that are going to show up. So, yeah, it's pretty neat and just a good time with the live music. Great food from Whole Foods. Yeah.
Let's take a quick call. It's Bob in St. Augustine. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a great topic, and I'd love to see the growth of the EV happening in all municipalities. I've watched it, its emergence, and watched the problems that we're having. And as your panel is discussing, infrastructure is without a doubt the biggest question mark in people's minds. And I know that they're talking about centralized or large charging stations where people can go to, similar to like gas stations. But how about electric parking kiosks in the place of parking meters? They did a study in, I want to say it was Seattle, where they changed out a certain percentage of quarter meters for EV parking kiosks, and they found that, one, they were making more money off of the electric kiosks, and, two, they really sparked the growth of the industry of vehicles. Essentially, what they're doing is they're doubling the range of the vehicle. So I'd just like to get your panel's thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Yeah, we've got to take some small steps here in Duval County, and we're doing that. Certainly with this partnership and this public charging infrastructure, that's a step in the right direction. The technology's improving all the time. We're going to start seeing some of the things that he talked about. You'll start seeing things like wireless charging in the future.
That's 2.0 for Duval.
2.0, maybe 3.0. The other thing you talked about in doubling the range, it's a real critical piece that we're also emphasizing and working with our commercial customers on is workplace charging. So if you have chargers in your workplace, you definitely double the range because you get to work, you fully charge, you can get back home.
And some companies do now, right,
Jeff? Right, and yeah. I think actually the effort we're talking about, just to clarify, these will be more than just locations at fueling stations, as you mentioned. These will be at restaurants and office parks and other opportunities. The only caveat, as the applicants were to submit, was that there's public access to these stations. So we will be putting them in areas that are common for activity.
And at some point, we may configure these, or even the fast chargers that you talked about, to look more like gas pumps so that it is more mainstream. We're going to get there. Right now,
that's in the long-range plan. Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. In the meantime, come on out this Thursday night, if this interests you at all, to the North Florida Drive Electric Rally. This is a free event at the Whole Foods on San Jose Boulevard. Music, refreshments, prizes, and a chance to test drive plug-in or electric cars. We're talking the Nissan Leaf, the Tesla, the Chevy Volt, and many others. A ride and drive opportunity to learn about the benefits of EVs. Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of North Florida TPO, and Peter King, Program Manager with JEA. Guys, thanks for being with us. The really interesting event coming up. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Let's talk about this.
And Cole's up next with more on the Jaguars' disappointing home opener. That's right after this.
Inside Out courses pair college students with inmates stuck behind bars as classmates. Both professors and prisoners say it offers unique benefits for kids and convicts.
It humanizes people on both sides of these walls.
It helps to make the walls between us more permeable.
That's later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community supported public radio.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Listen to After Hours to relax with music that spans the world in all styles from classical to doo-wop. Weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4, and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green.
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars opened the season looking like the Jaguars of the past several years.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper here now with the disappointing news and a cold cut or two from the locker room. Cole, it's so sad to see this yet again.
You know, and it doesn't mean that this is going to happen all year.
Right, but...
But, for all the hope that came out of the preseason... You might not have seen much of a difference in yesterday's Jaguars performance. 20-9 loss to the Carolina Panthers on opening day. 3 drop passes, an inconsistent offense, a defense that didn't get enough of a pass rush on Carolina quarterback Cam Newton. A lot of the problems that the Jaguars ended the season with last year and some of the concerns that they ended the preseason with, and they all kind of got rolled into one, and that's when you get a 20-9 loss on opening day at home. After the game, Gus Bradley was down as much as we have seen him, which is probably still not as down as most football coaches are after a loss. But Bradley said he thought his team was prepared to play better, but they just didn't. And when you hear a coach say things like that, you start to wonder, is this going to sink in? Listen, this is not all on the coaches, not all on the players. This is a systemic issue right now. Blake Bortles got off to a slow start, but then he did find a rhythm for a while there. Then he lost it again, which is okay when you're a rookie, but that's not what's expected out of him now that he's in his second year.
Right.
Bortles contributed to the loss through a couple of interceptions, including a pick six, interception return for a touchdown, on a play that he frankly looked like a rookie. Stared down the receiver, didn't look off of him, threw it, and the guy took it all the way back. I spoke with linebacker Paul Posluszny after the game, and the usually even-keeled team captain was trying not to let the loss linger.
Considering the sort of the expectations of taking that step forward this mm-hmm. year, it is just one game, but how do you put it in context?
I mean, it's tough because it would have been such a great feeling to start the season off with a win. Now, so we don't get that. We say, okay, well, now it's time to... We're really going to have to come in tomorrow and say, all right, let's learn from this, but not be down or not feel bad for ourselves. No one else is. You know, let's learn and say, okay, it's time to go. You know, it's time to go because we have another home game coming up with another big-time offense. So let's get things straightened out and get ready and excited to prepare for another opponent.
Now, I will tell you, that is the kind of thing that Posluszny would say after losses consistently, and mm-hmm. he is a real pro, but... I sense something in the Jaguars' locker room and with Gus Bradley and around the team that the expectations were so much different this year, year three. As Gus said before the season, it's built. Now it's time to do it. It's no more building the team. It's been built. They've got their quarterback. They've got their players.
What's the problem?
Well, again, as I outlined, there are a number of issues in that game specifically. The real problem, though, is that the Jaguars face the Dolphins on Sunday, mm-hmm. then the Patriots on the road and the Colts on the road. They won't be favored in any of those games. After starting the last two seasons 0-8 and 0-6 respectively, 0-4 seems very realistic. They'll face the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Week 5. The Bucs got hammered by Tennessee yesterday. But you have to wonder, how can you keep a locker room together? How can you keep guys focused? How can mm-hmm. you keep guys motivated?
Morale, yeah.
If that's the way this thing starts. And mm-hmm. we looked at the schedule when it came out and thought, boy, this is going to be... a tough start to the season. But hey, that Carolina game, they might be able to win. And then, hey, maybe if you get off to a 2-0 start at home, you know.
And Gus Bradley's got to be thinking about the length of his tenure with
this team.
Job
security.
Sure.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as we said before, I thought 5.5 was kind of the breakpoint number in terms of wins this year. If they won more than 5 games and they'd be in good shape, they'd be able to, you know, say, all right, moving in a positive direction, you lose less than 5.5, so 5 or fewer, I think there are going to be some questions. And so we'll see what happens. There's 15 games to go. It's just one game, and we always put too much into the first game of the season because it's the only thing we have. But it was not the way anybody wanted to start this thing.
Too bad for Jags fans. On the other hand, the Gators had a good night over the weekend.
Well, they beat East Carolina 31-24, same team they faced in their bowl game after last season. One of the big stories, though, that came out of that game was the sideline harangue that head coach Jim McElwain gave to running back Kelvin Taylor, the son of Jaguars' great Fred Taylor. The younger Taylor gave a throat slash sign after a big play, and McElwain didn't like it. Taylor tweeted later that he respects the coach, but McElwain certainly showed his fire on the sideline. Florida opens SEC play at Kentucky on Saturday.
What do you think about that? The coach telling the player to show more respect?
Yeah, to be basically to show some maturity and you know, grow up. And I think it's a fair thing. Now, one of the things that if you're a Gator fan, you have to worry about is he goes off like that, you know, explosive. And we saw that with Will Muschamp previously. That didn't play well.
Mm-hmm.
So far, McElwain, he hasn't used up his chits in that, as far as that's concerned. It's fine, and I think Taylor is responding rightly to it. And obviously, having a dad like Fred, who is such a pro and learned through the years, is going to help give him that positive spin on it.
Sure, and lots of college football to talk about. Football fans so excited, and we had a kind of a cool football feeling weekend, too.
Yeah, the weather was great for this time of year. Florida State beat South Florida 34-14. Dalvin Cook, the second-best rushing game in Florida State history, 266 yards. FSU will travel to Boston College for a rare Friday night game this week. Georgia opened SEC play with a victory over Vandy, 31-14, not quite as emphatic as you might expect. Big one for Georgia on Saturday as they host Steve Spurrier and South Carolina.
And last but not least, you're the voice of the Armada. They couldn't pull it out against New York, the New York Cosmos.
Best team in the league.
Yeah.
And the Armada played them to a stalemate for more than a half, but a controversial red card pulled on defender Lucas Trejo put the Armada a man down for the final 39 minutes. Cosmos took advantage, winning 1-0. Armada still looking for a road victory. They play a very good Fort Lauderdale side on Wednesday night on the road. Then after a bye week, they're back home September the 26th. That game, by the way, T-Men tribute night. The team will wear the old throwback uniforms honoring the old Jacksonville team men of the early 80s.
The T-Men.
Yes, and if you know the history of the T-Men, they were owned by the Lipton Tea Company. They were in New England, so named after the, you know, tea uh-huh. party whole thing.
Uh-huh.
They moved to Jacksonville, played in the 81 and 82 seasons here, drew very well at the old Gator Bowl, and members of the old T-Men team will be here and be a part of things, and there'll be some special things done with the throwback jerseys after the game.
People, younger soccer fans might not realize there was a soccer team here before.
There was indeed, and at one point, they drew extremely. In fact, it was the in those days, the NASL was the highest level of pro soccer in the United States. And so this was the first real major league team in Jacksonville.
Wow. Well, fall sports is off and running, and our man Cole Pepper, always on top of it. So good to see you, as always. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. Never miss a program. Just subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, deep in a South African cave, scientists have discovered a new human-like species which shares characteristics with modern people. How those findings could change our understanding of evolution and what it means to be human. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.